Welcome to Becoming a Whole Athlete, a podcast about health and fitness by improving the whole you to perform your best in life and sports from the inside out. We take the whole approach to improve fat loss, health, and performance. If you are an athlete who wants to improve your performance or just want to slow the aging process, learn how to fuel, train, and perform as a holistic athlete as your host, Debbie Potts, unleashes tips, tricks, and breaks myths that the mainstream media doesn't tell you about. Remember, high performance in fitness and life begins from the inside out.
Hey everybody, it's Debbie and I'm with a new episode of the Whole Athlete Podcast. And today I have another new guest co-host. His name is Jonathan Ross. And if you're in the fitness industry and you go to continue education and help yourself grow and inspire others, Jonathan is always there. Speaking of a new topic. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Debbie.
So I was here and listened to you for years at the IDEA Fitness Convention. So most people, our listeners, are not fitness professionals. So tell us a little bit about you and your background and kind of how you got to where you are today. And we'll go into what we're talking about after that.
Well, it's a pretty interesting and powerful story. My father died when he was 424 pounds in 1995. And that was really the beginning of my interest to work in fitness. Because I had a background and an upbringing that was involved with having two obese parents. My mother was 370 pounds at the time my father died in 1995, and I grew up eating a lot of junk food and going to McDonald's and getting a lot of fast food and drank a lot of soda and was running to the ice cream truck every day in the summer and had a lot of candy and just lived that kind of life. I ate sugary cereals. If I had any vegetables, they had to be drenched in butter. Fortunately, I was always the kind of individual that was very active. So I had a real natural love of activity, and I would always be out in the yard playing with the neighborhood kids and just toss my books down as soon as I got home and head back outside and play with the neighborhood kids. So I had that in my favor. But my upbringing was one of, I guess, the easiest way to say it is just like kind of an ordinary childhood. I didn't have a great example of like an athlete or an active family. And it wasn't something that I was taught at an early age either. It's just something that was a little bit wired into me for movement, but we didn't really live a healthy lifestyle growing up. So I come from a background that's more like the average person than like the average fitness professional in the typical way. Maybe people in the public think of the average fitness professional, and especially to see me with the bald head, the goatee and the mustache. I kind of jokingly sometimes say I have that I just broke out of prison look, and here's your trainer coming at you. Some people can be intimidated by that, but I try to be approachable by getting into that storytelling about my background. I'm just an ordinary person.
Yeah.
And so my entry into fitness was really designed to speak to people like my parents, like my family, like everyday people who just need to find a way to successfully fit fitness into their lives so fitness can have the powerful impact of making your life better and whatever you love about life also gets better because of it and you enjoy it more.
Exactly. So you lost your father and then your mother, she was overweight too. And so you both had a big impact of losing, she lost her husband, you lost your father. And that seemed, I was reading your website and it seems like she made some drastic changes as well as yourself that led you into fitness, but it made her change her lifestyle choices as well.
She did. She began eating better and then eventually was willing to add activity. And she wasn't really that willing to do much physical activity out of the gate. She knew she needed to make a change, but she was also setting her old habits and behaviors and patterns. And she also was, quite frankly, kind of devastated by the loss of my father. So it was hard for her. And then when she got out of that, she wanted to start eating better and just be focused on nutrition first. And then she became more and more receptive to the idea of incorporating physical activity into her lifestyle because of the fact that she was feeling better enough from the nutrition changes. And so it was a process. And it took her 7 years to lose 170 pounds. And a lot of people, when they hear that story, they get discouraged. And the thing that is interesting is that...
Why did they get discouraged?
Because of how long it takes.
Oh,
so if I tell...
170 pounds is a lot.
And that's exactly what happens. If I tell the average person how much weight she lost, they get excited. And then the follow-up question is always, well, how long did that take? And then they hear 7 years. And this kind of takes a wind out of their sails. But the interesting thing about it is she never really went backwards. She never really gave any of that weight back during that process. And the key thing is that she made progress in bigger chunks, and then she would kind of plateau for a while. And the word plateau in health circles has a negative connotation. But if you think about what's happening, if you're going out for a big hiking trip and you got a lot of gear on and you're climbing and climbing and climbing, the plateau is kind of a good thing. Plateau means you level off before the next climb and you get to kind of take a break. And that's really what she did. So she plateaued. She didn't go backwards. Plateau is level. It's not going backwards. So she made progress and she would kind of need to rest and just settle and gear up mentally for the next change. So every time she was needing to make a new change, there's a certain difficulty with making a new change. So you need to kind of gather your emotional strength again to have the willpower to kind of get through the new change. And that's what she did. So she was always moving forward. And certainly she could have made progress faster had she incorporated health behaviors faster. But her progress was always forward, or at least staying where she was. And that's an important message for anyone struggling with getting fitter, is that you just have to make tomorrow better than today and repeat. It doesn't have to all be done in one day, because she didn't get to be 370 pounds in a couple of years. So she's probably not going to lose all that in a couple of years.
Yeah. It's like my book title, Life is Not a Race. You know, you don't need to do everything in one day. It's every day is a new day, and living in the present, as we were talking about, and making it a journey, not just something I got to do all of it in 30 days, lose that weight, but it's changing those lifestyle habits. And as we were talking about, it's enjoying the process and making it fun and making exercise and moving more and eating better. Not, I hate calling it having people diet. Like, that's short term. Let's work on changing lifestyle habits that overall, you know, so it's not just something you're going to do for 21 days and stop and go back to old habits, but we want to teach people that, okay, this is how you should do it 80% of the time. And then, you know, once in a while you do your little cheat day or whatever you're going to do. But I think it's the whole thing is everything we do to be healthier from the inside out is working on the whole person, as we talk about, and how to make it ongoing process. So what you've come to, you've spoke at all these different seminars, you're a top trainer, you've won lots of awards over the years. And now, what are you working on? We talked a little bit at the fitness conference and you really inspired me to share your story. So I'll let you kind of take over what you're working on now and what's inspired you to do this.
So, well, first I want to start by complimenting you on the title of your book, because I think it's a great message. Life is not a race. It's a journey. It really is. And that gives me an opportunity to share one of my favorite sayings with people, which is that the common saying of the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. It's also true that a journey of 10 feet begins with one step. So a journey someone gives up quickly and doesn't stick with also begins with one step. So making the first steps are critical. Mm-hmm. And so for me, the transition from, I guess, trainer or whatever you want to call us when we first start our careers about 20 years ago now, is that you stop teaching just exercise and you realize that physical change is actually more about change in many other areas before you get to the physical change. And that's especially in the last 10 years or so, I've been really diving into that idea of the mental aspect, the whole person aspect. The physical side is important, but once you learn how to do a dumbbell chest press, there's not really much new to learn there. So you kind of understand the behavior change and people adopting behaviors and their approach to life and how they think about things and feel about things is really going to define many of their actions and their ability to stick with any consistent pattern of physical activity. Mm-hmm. So getting into reaching out to that population that I'm most passionate and is near and dear to me to reach, which is the everyday people like my parents, just not even people that are necessarily that obese, but just people that are just not thinking about exercise as the anchor of their life like we do as fitness professionals. We're the weirdos, as I like to say. We kind of people think we're crazy because we love it, and so they're trying to figure out how they can go to work and take care of their children and keep their home up to date and keep their car running and keep their bills paid and socialize with friends and maintain family and social commitments and then somehow squeeze exercise into that. And I find that we're always drawn to things that we enjoy, and this sort of universally accepted notion that exercise must be pleasurable in order for it to be beneficial, I think is heavily flawed. And it comes out of this more adult-like notion of we have to do the things that we should do and the fun time of our lives is gone. And so what I found is that when you see people come alive with exercise, with an enjoyment of exercise, you'll see that in a single session, in a single experience of exercise that is pleasurable, fun, enjoyable, even though it may be intense, there is a shift in the mindset, and there is no one on this earth that can change their body with a single exercise session. Mm-hmm. Physical change happens slowly. And so it only happens if you stick with it long enough to affect that change physically. If I can flip a switch in someone's mind for how they think and feel and their concept of exercise towards something that is favorable and pleasurable, or at least they get a little bit of a crush on it if they don't fall in love with it, is kind of a way I often say it to people, because it doesn't, you mean I have to love exercise? No, you don't have to love it, but you got to get a crush on it, because if you hate it, you're never going to do it every day.
Right.
And that's an important message. And that's the shift I'm kind of working on now, is taking this idea of integrating fun with intensity and bringing that together in a concept I'm calling Funtensity, which is designed to transform people's attitudes and their thoughts and feelings about exercise by making it fun enough that you're just lost in the experience and you're not focusing on the intensity. And that's the key shift I'm kind of trying to work on with everyone that I work with.
And I love that. And that's why I really wanted to have this podcast with you, because that's so true. And that's what maybe it's taken us this many years. You know, I've been in industry as, 25 years now too. And it's just, you can't just train people 2-3 days a week and get change. And it's the rest of the day what they do. But also I look at the gym, like I was just at Fridays, I'm able to go to my health club where I used to work, and I have my own studio now, and I can't stand, it's just so frustrating to see people that do go to the gym. They just make it so boring. And at my studio, we do fun stuff, and I make it different every day. And when I have clients and add in mobility and training, and I'm trying to implement some of the stuff we're going to talk about that you're doing, but it's, just see people think to work out, they got to go to the elliptical for 30 minutes or be on the treadmill, or they're on the recumbent bike reading the paper. And maybe that's fun to some people, but I see that as the boring workout. That's why people quit working out, because it's so boring. And then they like stop, and then they're like, oh, I got to get back in shape. And they start over again or in that hamster wheel. And that's my thing too. It's like, okay, make it fun. If you don't enjoy it, yeah, you're not going to do it. You're going to dread going to the gym, but.
Well, I'm so glad you're doing that as well. It's a really critical thing that we start to do. And the more of us to do it, the more change we have. There is resistance to this idea in the fitness world, simply because there are people out there that have the mindset that, it has to suck or it won't be beneficial. And you have to go to war with the weight room. And that message isn't necessarily wrong. However, it's the wrong message for approximately 80% of the population, because those are the kind of people that are turned off by that idea of exercise. So it's only wrong if it doesn't work for the masses. And I'm all about what works for the majority of people. And, and I firmly believe, and I think you do too, that there's this idea of if you want to stick with it, you got to be drawn to it a little bit, because it's something you got to do fairly regularly. So it's a lot easier if you want to do it rather than feeling like, oh, it's time to do that chore again.
Yeah, it's definitely making it fun. And, I was trying some of the bar method type of yoga Pilates stuff with people, mix it up. And it's just always doing something different. And it gets your mind, what you're going to talk about, what you're doing and stuff we did in the seminar with you, is you have to think. And what you and I were talking about in LA at the conference is to get people to focus when they walk in the door for me to train them. They are focused on what they're doing right now. And that's with everything in life. And that's always a struggle, because we've got cell phone, computer, people, car. I mean, there's so many distractions. And so when you come to the studio to work out, I want people to be present, to be on. I don't want you to focus on that work meeting you just left, what you've got coming up or what your kids are doing. I just want you to focus on you, what you feel, how to be connected with your body. I can feel my core engage. I feel locked down. I feel where my head is in relationship to the rest of my body, and be able to do that. And I think creating exercises as you're doing makes it more fun, because then you have to shift your mindset to where you are and what you're doing at this moment right now and focus. And that's a problem I think we're having.
It's so true. Many people believe the best way to get through exercise is to completely disassociate, which is to kind of distract themselves from the fact that they're exercising. And that's not wrong if it works. But I believe that for many people, the storm of life is creating such a mental static, so to speak, that if we can actually engage their mind while challenging their bodies, they'll be more dropped into that experience. And it's like a little bit of a mental holiday. I try to tell people, look, you've got a thousand things that you're kind of worrying about. Don't you want to take a bit of a mental break from that?
Yeah.
Why not use your exercise time and your physical activity time as a chance to kind of take a little bit of a mental holiday from all your demands? So that way it becomes something, again, you're looking forward to. It's like, wow, this isn't as, I'm not doing the mental heavy lifting for this hour. I'm exercising. Well, now I'm beginning to enjoy this a little bit more.
Yeah, it, I find it that's so true. And then if you get people that are coming from work and they're used to being the boss, and then they've let go of the reins and like, no, you're my, I get to tell you what to do. This is one time of the day that you're not making decisions. You don't have to think about what's next. I just want you to focus on the exercise and what I'm telling you to do and what we're working on. But it's funny because some people like have to shift out of that mindset that, okay, I'm not the boss anymore. I don't have to be in control and be in the work brain, but relax and have fun.
Well, that's part of the fun of doing what we do is learning how to engage different personalities and lead them in exercise. And sometimes you do have to take more of a directive role, and sometimes you collaborate more with people, and it's kind of neat to figure out the right approach to take with each individual.
Yeah. So let's talk about how do you do that. So let's talk about working out and how, what are some of the concepts and how do you make exercise more play?
Well, I think about a child. And I think about me specifically growing up. I mean, I didn't exercise. I didn't exercise until I was probably in my late teens or early 20s. I didn't quote unquote exercise. And so I think about a lot of times having snowball fights or playing tag or playing soccer or football or just doing any of the things that we did as kids. And I remembered the experience of just being lost in that and just running around on a playground or, you know, just running on like merry-go-rounds or being on swings or jungle gyms and just doing it. There was very little thought about it. I was just running around, lost in the play, lost in the playfulness, the freedom from time, the sense of there's no purpose to this. I'm just doing it because it's fun. And there's also an intensity to that. You watch kids running around on a playground. They'll just run and run and run, and then they'll stop. And when they stop, that's when they realize how tired they are. And so I had started about 7 or 8 years ago, really actively studying the brain and just looking at the understanding that we make almost all of our decisions based primarily on emotion was a powerful shift for me, because when I was a trained scientist, my college degree was in astronomy. So I have a little bit more of a, I guess, a science background. And this notion for me that we make all of our decisions based on emotion was like, wow, that was a game changer. And so I realized that we have this need to feel emotionally drawn to the things that we do. And then I started thinking about exercise and how much people tend to have a dislike of it. So I started to play with these ideas of engaging the mind more. And it wasn't initially the plan to kind of develop fun and exercise together. But what was initially the plan was to do what's called cognitive processing and exercise. So, for example, if I'm having you do an exercise and I want you to move to either the left or the right, I might call out a number. And if it's an odd number, you move to the left, and an even number, you move to the right. Or if I call out the name of a vegetable, you move to the left. And if I call out the name of an animal, you move to the right. There's something to get people to think about something and then produce a physical response, because it leads to a higher level of mental engagement during that physical activity. And it gives you that mental holiday that we're talking about. It makes you be fully immersed mentally in the experience and remove that kind of distracted feeling and that sense of I'm not really enjoying this. It brings you more fully into that experience. But then I saw what happens when I started to do that. If you have a group of people do those types of exercises, what you'll find is that if you do, say, for example, a side lunge and you step to the left or the right, they just do the exercise and it's fine. But if you make it about moving left or right based on an odd or even number or what type of thing you're calling out, people start smiling and laughing and they don't want to be the one that messes up. And I start seeing these grinning faces from ear to ear while they're moving. And I was like, wait a minute, this isn't what I'm used to seeing with people in exercise. So it started as an idea to engage people more mentally. And what I found is that when you do that, they actually have more fun. Mm-hmm. So then that just became something I just started running with. And this idea of merging fun and fitness and intensity, which is, again, I'm calling the program Funtensity. It's currently in development. I'm just really starting to work on it now. But it's an idea that I started really to practically put into play in a lot of my one-on-one training sessions or small group classes. And then I started to develop a small group class devoted specifically to that concept. It's actually called Fitness Playground. And what we do is we have all partner exercises. We use traditional equipment. There's some dumbbells and kettlebells and ropes and plyo boxes, but we also use things like balloons, beach balls, sometimes rubber chickens, and a lot of different ways to have. I've kind of become known as the rubber chicken guy. So there's been people I've been back, and I go to certain events every year, and I sometimes bring the rubber chickens with me, and we use them. And some people say, "Oh, look, the rubber chicken guy is back." So it's kind of.
What do you do with the whole, rubber chickens? Do you like throw them at people when they're doing a box jump or something?
Well, there's a number of things. Probably one of the most popular things. There's really two things we do that are based on the same movement. One is I have two people facing each other, and you put the rubber chicken on top of your feet. You hold your feet together, put it on top of your feet, and you kind of throw it to the other person with your feet, and they catch it, and then they put it on their feet, throw it back to you. And I have the teams of two record the high score of whoever gets the most catches during the work intervals. And then we sometimes turn that into a relay race where we throw the rubber chickens with that same method of putting a chicken on top of your foot. So you throw it with your feet down, and then you go chase it and do it again, and you come back, and then your partner goes. So we sometimes do relay races with them as well. But people are really just blown away by how much fun they have. The whole concept is sort of summarized in, if you lose yourself in play, you'll find yourself in fitness. So when you're focused on the play and not focused on the intensity, you can have a very intense, physically beneficial experience that is one you didn't really know you were having. So the current model of fitness where we stand there and look in the mirror and watch ourselves and we count out reps mentally, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. However, again, it's not probably the best approach for 80% of the population, because we've been teaching this for 40 years and the majority of the population does not consistently exercise. And I've seen the transformation when I've been teaching this class called Fitness Playground that I do. I've had three generations of people exercising together at the same time during the summer months where we are now. Some of the people that I have bring their grandchildren to the class. And it is such a moving experience for me to see that, to see.
And they're working out together.
To see a grandmother or grandfather working out with their grandchild. I mean, I always get a little emotional even talking about this because of the power in that, where I didn't have that. I didn't exercise with my grandparents. My grandparents were alive when I was growing up, and I spent time with them, and I valued that time, but I didn't exercise with them. I didn't do anything like what I'm seeing in the classes, where you see a grandfather or a grandmother and a grandchild just get completely exhausted together, and they're grinning from ear to ear, mm-hmm. and it's the most beautiful thing to see, and that's because there's a space for them to do the same thing, and it's intense, and it's playful, so they're both doing it. Now, you couldn't take your typical 10-year-old to the average adult's workout, because they're going to stand there and pick up some dumbbells and do some lunges or shoulder presses with it, and the average 10-year-old is not going to find that type of exercise interesting.
So what do you do with the grandparents with the kids? You have them exercise together and have them play games just as you mm-hmm. do with any age? So it's, they move at their own level, their own intensity, but they can still get their heart rate up while they're playing and having fun, being occupied if it's like hopscotch. Yep. And
it's a circuit style workout, so we have partner exercises. Some of the exercises that I use, both people work continuously. Like, for example, the one with the rubber chicken, we toss it back and forth. Both people work continuously. We have other things where we might use the heavy ropes, and then one person gets actual rest while the other person goes. But there's usually some combination of those two movements. There's usually only maybe two or three exercises where the partner is at rest. Usually I have the majority of the exercises, both partners are moving continuously. And I always choose movements that are easily scalable up or down based on the height or age or ability level of the participants. So I choose those with that in mind, but there's always plenty of options available, because when you start sort of opening up the idea that humans moving with a smile on their face is really all exercise is. As long as it's intense enough to provide the stimulus for physical change, we've sort of crossed the minimum threshold required to have what we would call, quote unquote, exercise. We just have to broaden the definition of it.
Oh, that's so good. So are you writing a book on this or doing some seminars? How are you spreading this word out?
It's right now very broad. It may be a book. I'm thinking it probably will be a book, but the book will be about more than just the idea of fun and exercise. There's going to be a lot of things in there about the brain and willpower and emotion and how we can use some of these things to make our lives easier when it comes to pursuing a healthier life. Because I really do believe that when we kind of have the idea of harmony, well, harmony is when our actions and our desires are pointing in the same direction. And I can see the shift when that happens with people, and you know you're onto something. That if I get abducted by aliens tomorrow, a lot of the people that I work with will still pursue a healthy lifestyle. I don't need to be there directing them to change every single day, because their internal chemistry has changed. Their internal concept of exercise and movement has shifted, and they want it. They are moving towards it. So they desire it, and then their actions are pointing in the same direction as the desires. And to me, that's a great definition of harmony, is when what you want to do and what you actually do are the same thing.
That's so good. So we are already running out of time. It goes so quickly every time. We should talk about the last few, like, say, five different exercise little tricks people can do now into their workouts if they're working out alone or with somebody, but some of the little mind games that you can add into any workout.
Sure. And I will add too that this program is so new. It's sort of a concept in my head. It'll probably be a book. It'll probably be something that is available to consumers. It will also be something that's available to fitness professionals. There may be some educational content to teach other trainers how to do this. It's all so new. It's an idea in my head, and I'm kind of spending the last half of this year planning it and beginning to bang it out. So everybody, awesome. Just keep an eye out for that.
I think next year you'll probably have some seminars. You should do more seminars and then do a certification course program like they do, the 8-hour continuing education would be good.
Yeah, I think it would be one, because I've taught enough of it to trainers, and they've been so excited to learn it because they can see the shift that they have. So I'll start the answer to your question with a story. There's a woman who came to the class for the first time a few months ago, the class fitness playground. And she said the most interesting thing to me at the end of it, she said, "That's the most fun I've ever had in my life, pause, and I don't think I'm ever coming again." So here's how I can explain that. She said that because she worked really hard. She's a little bit competitive. And so she worked really hard, which means she actually worked so hard, she started to get a little bit nauseous. Now, anybody that knows me knows that that's a terrible approach to fitness. People that believe you should throw up or train until you puke, or they really don't know anything about exercise, and they really have no business teaching it to others. So the idea that we should do it to that point is just flat out incorrect. And so what she did, though, she was so lost in the playfulness and the friendly competitiveness of it that she worked hard enough that she made herself nauseous. And she's not used to doing that, even though she's competitive. So once I understood that from talking to her, I'm like, "What do you mean? You had the best time of your life and you're never coming back?"
Yeah.
So she said, well, she explained it to me, and I said, "Well, come back and we'll just learn how to moderate your intensity." And the second and third time she came, it was much easier for her because, number one, she'd been through it once. But number two, she was able to kind of recognize that, it's not about, there's nothing really at stake here. She doesn't have to do everything perfectly, and she didn't need to kill herself to that extent that she felt like that. But she was having so much fun, she was willing to work that hard, and that's the key. So for anyone looking to kind of add some playfulness to their exercise program, do something involving either like reactivity, which means I have to see what's going on around me and then produce a physical result. I don't always know exactly what's going to be happening. So for example, an exercise that I've been using recently, just created a few months ago, is called Wall Ball Highway. We take this, you take the oversized med balls, you have a partner, you have three or four of them lined up in front of the wall, and your partner each grab a ball and you throw it up in the air against the wall, but you don't catch it, you let it bounce, because then you just move on to the next ball. So you're trying to catch the other partner, but you each have to do your wall ball down the line of balls and go back to the beginning, and you keep moving. So there's a little bit of chasing involved, there's a little bit of reactivity involved in that you have to make sure you throw the ball high enough, get out of the way, find the other ball, which is going to be somewhere on the ground because the other partner let it bounce. Then you have to pick it up, get over the wall, and throw it. So there's not an easy understanding of, oh, the ball's going to be right here every time. I know exactly when it's coming. So there's an element of uncertainty in it. So reactivity and uncertainty are great ways to introduce playfulness into any exercise. Another way is something I mentioned earlier, which is where we introduce some cognitive processing, which is a fancy term for just that you have to make a mental decision about what to do. So we can do this with even or odd numbers. You can do it with math. You can do it with pointing. You can do it with verbal commands, where you're essentially having people work with each other to provide either a visual or auditory cue, which then determines the action. So you can say go or stop, just to have people start or stop again. It's kind of like red light, green light we used to play as kids. Same concept. Mm-hmm. We just bring it into exercise. It's really not that new. It's just we have to take it out of the kid world and bring it into the adult world and have little races work really well. Friendly competition, like relay races, work really well. We play versions of tic-tac-toe. We do all kinds of ball tosses. We push each other on wooden plyo boxes for relay races. There's just endless, endless options for races that work really well because people will become surprisingly competitive when you do that. So you wanted five. That's about three or four.
That's good. I just think it's good to give examples of, you know, people that aren't trainers. Here's, you know, what we're talking about, how you can do it yourself, or, you know, hopefully you have a good trainer that you can see once a week that even can mix it up or find something that makes exercise fun and gets you moving. Because even people that just do spin class all the time, yeah, people are into that and it's fun, but you're getting movement. So it's beneficial for your health as well as makes you laugh and have a good time. And happiness is one of my eight holistic method elements, because I think it's so important for people to have fun and laugh and feel good. And exercise, that you can put that together. It doesn't have to be separate.
Yep.
Exercise can be make you happy, and it doesn't, even if you don't do, you know, competitive sports and triathlons, marathons, that when you go to the gym, everyone needs to do strength training, even if you do walking or go do sports or whatever. I think strength and mobility training is really important, but like you said, how do you get people to do it and not quit and keep it going, that they make it fun, that they don't even realize they're exercising at the same time?
Yeah, and there's a lot of opportunity for anyone listening who wants to see more of those examples. I know sometimes a lot of this conceptually, it's hard to imagine, but I post a lot of videos all the time on this stuff. I'll periodically take videos. I've just recently written articles on adding fun to fitness for both the American Council on Exercise and an organization called Spry, but those will be posted on my Facebook page. I put a lot of YouTube videos up, so my YouTube channel is one I put a lot of these exercises up on, so people can just follow me if they're curious about this. And I'm always sharing with the world and showing exercises.
Good. I want one of those Spry box jumps that rotates the height. That's on my list to order. Those look fun.
Those are great.
Where are people supposed to find you? It's a website. Give them all the website, social media, YouTube videos. What are the links?
Pretty easy. Everything I do is easily found through my main website, which is Aion Fitness. It's AION and then the word fitness.com. And the word Aion is a Greek word that means an era, a lifetime, or an infinitely long span of time. And that's kind of what I'm all about, is teaching fitness for a lifetime. So it's AionFitness.com. That'll get you to everything else I'm doing, all my articles and books and presentations, whatever else is happening. And also social media, easy to find me there too. My handle is always Jonathan Ross, and then add the word fit. So I'd take my first name, last name, JonathThan, then Ross, add the word fit, and that's how you find me on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and all that stuff. And my profile photo is usually my face, so you can find me pretty easily.
That is a good idea, to use your face for your profile.
Yes, it is. So you're, anyone who actually wants to be found.
I know, exactly. So YouTube, that's where you can find some videos on exercises. And then if you're a fitness professional, I people don't know what IDEA is and go to workshops. I was a little worried about that trainer, because I think you should know what IDEA is. It's a fitness conference that we have in next year's in Las Vegas, and you've been into Seattle to the West Coast. So you do the West Coast and East Coast personal training summits as well?
Yeah, I've done those before. I just love sharing information with people. It changes their lives. So I'll go anywhere where I'm asked to go. And if it's a good experience and there's people just being very receptive to the message, and you know you're going to have an effect that will last longer than you do. My hope is to plant a seed in anyone that I work with that lasts a lifetime.
Wow. You are great. Very passionate person, just like Todd Durkin. Just inspire millions. Make an impact. Love it. Well, thank you so much for your time today and coming on, sharing your Funtensity story and what your mission is. And hopefully everyone can help and spread the word, and we can start changing the way people approach exercise.
Well, you're welcome. And I want to thank you for all you do, for everyone that you work with as well. And anybody listening to this, you don't have to overthink getting playful and moving. Just take a tennis ball, bounce it around the next time you go for a walk. It doesn't have to be something you don't have to go buy special equipment to do. Just start enjoying physical activity. Put a smile on your face while you're moving your arms and legs, and everything will get better.
Amen. Great. Well, thank you, and enjoy your summer, and we'll be in touch soon.
Thank you, Debbie. Thanks, Debbie. I wish you well.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to our show. If you found yourself saying, I want to learn how to become a holistic athlete, then head over to iTunes to leave us a rating and a review. If you have a question for your host, Debbie, then head over to our The Whole Athlete Podcast Facebook page or go to our website, www.thewholeathletepodcast.com. Until next time, remember that high performance gains in fitness and life begins from the inside out.